जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजन। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजन। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवरधारी। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। यमुना तीरा वन चारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्त श्री श्रीमारे श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभु पार की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल। समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय। ऑगर्स टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑगर्स टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज। ऑगर्स टू श्री श्री गुरु गौरांगो। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ Nam namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 13, Brahma Stealing the Boys and Calves, text number 61. Word meanings. There in Vrindavan, Udvahat, assuming, Pashupa, Bhangsha, Shishutva, Natyam, the play of being a child in a family of cowherd men. Another of Krishna's names is Gopal, he who maintains the cows. Brahma, the absolute truth, Advayam, without a second. Param, the supreme. Anantam, unlimited. Agarabodham, possessing unlimited knowledge. Vatsan, the calves. Sakin and his friends, the boys. Ivapura, just as before. Porita, everywhere. Vichinvat, searching. Ekam, alone, all by himself. Sapani Kavalam, with a morsel of food in his hand. Parameshti, Lord Brahma, Achashta, saw. Tato dvahat pashupa vangsha shishutva natyam. Brahma dvayam paramananda magada bodham. Vatsan sakini vapura parito vichinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshcha chashta. Tato dvahat pashupa vangsha shishutva natyam. Brahma dvayam paramananta magada bodham. Vatsan sakini vapura parito vinchinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshcha chashta. Tatra dvahat pashupa vangsha shishutva natyam. Brahma dvayam paramanandam aghada bodham. Vatsan sakini vapura parito vichinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshcha chashta. Brahmadvayam paramanantam aghada bodham. Vatsan sakini vapura parito vichinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshya chashta. Gharabodham. Vatsan sakini vapura parito vichinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshya chashta. Tatrodvahatpashupavamsha-vishuddha-hatyam. Brahmadvayam paramanandam abhara-bodham. Vatsansakini-vapura-purito-vichinvad. Ekam sapani kovalam parameshya chashta. Ladies. Tatrod vahat pashupavamsha shishupanatyam. Brahmadvayam paramanandam aghalabodham. Vatsansakini vapura parito vichinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshya chashta. Tatrod vahat pashupavamsha shishupanatyam. Brahmadvayam paramanandam aghadabodham. Vatsansakini vapura parito vichinvad. Ekam sapani kavalam parameshya chashta.
Translation. Then Lord Brahma saw the Absolute Truth, who is one without a second, who possesses full knowledge, and who is unlimited, assuming the role of a child in a family of cowherd men, and standing all alone, just as before, with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the calves and his cowherd friends. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The word aghara bodham, meaning full of unlimited knowledge, is significant in this verse. The Lord's knowledge is unlimited, and therefore one cannot touch where it ends, just as one cannot measure the ocean. What is the extent of our intelligence in comparison to the vast expanse of water in the ocean? On my passage to America, how insignificant the ship was, like a matchbox in the midst of the ocean. Krishna's intelligence resembles the ocean, for one cannot imagine how vast it is. The best course, therefore, is to surrender to Krishna. Don't try to measure Krishna. The word advayam, meaning one without a second, is also significant. Because Brahma was overcast by Krishna's maya, he was thinking himself the supreme. In the material world, everyone thinks, I am the best man in this world. I know everything. One thinks, why should I read Bhagavad Gita? I know everything. I have my own interpretation. Brahma, however, was able to understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna, Ishvara Paramakrishna. Another of Krishna's names, therefore, is Parameshwar. Now Brahma saw Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, not demonstrating his opulence, but standing just like an innocent boy with some food in his hand, loitering with his cowherd boyfriends, calves and cows. Brahma did not see Krishna as Chaturbhuja, the opulent Narayan. Rather, he simply saw an innocent boy. Nonetheless, he could understand that although Krishna was not demonstrating his power, he was the same Supreme Person. People generally do not appreciate someone unless he shows something wonderful. But here, although Krishna did not manifest anything wonderful, Brahma could understand that the same wonderful person was present like an ordinary child, although he was the master of the whole creation. Thus Brahma prayed, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I am the original person, the cause of everything. I bow down to you. This was his realization, Tamaham Bhajami. This is what is wanted. Vedeshu Durlabham. One cannot reach Krishna merely by Vedic knowledge. adhurlabham atma bhaktau. But when one becomes a devotee, then one can realize him. Brahma, therefore, became a devotee. In the beginning, he was proud of being Brahma, the Lord of the universe, but now he understood. Here is the Lord of the universe. I am simply an insignificant agent. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Krishna was playing like a dramatic actor. Because Brahma had some false prestige, thinking that he had some power, Krishna showed him his real position. A similar incident occurred when Brahma went to see Krishna in Dwarka. When Krishna's doorman informed Lord Krishna that Lord Brahma had arrived, Krishna responded, "Which Brahma? Ask him which Brahma." The doorman relayed this question, and Brahma was astonished. "Is there another Brahma besides me?" he thought. When the doorman informed Lord Krishna, "It is four-headed Brahma." Lord Krishna said, "Oh, four-headed. Call others. Show him." This is Krishna's position. For Krishna, the four-headed Brahma is insignificant, to say nothing of four-headed scientists. Material scientists think that although this planet is full of opulence, all others are vacant. Because they simply speculate, this is their scientific conclusion. But from the Bhagavatam, we understand that the entire universe is full of living entities everywhere. Thus, it is the folly of the scientists that although they do not know anything, they mislead people by presenting themselves as scientists, philosophers, and men of knowledge. To the very end, Prabhupada's blasting the scientists. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Following Srila Prabhupada's lead in the purport, I'm going to talk about some of the meanings of some of the words in this verse. So his description of Krishna here, he's Pashupa Vansha. Pashu means animals. Specifically means cows, of course, cows and calves. Pashu. And pa means, just like Pala here, in the purport Prabhupada says, or in the word for word, he says another name for Krishna is Gopala. So the Pala part, or pa, means protector of, or lord of. So Pashupa means cowherd, someone who takes care of cows. And Vansha means dynasty, or family. We use it for dynasty. We say Surya Vansha, Raghu Vansha, so on. So here, Pashupa Vansha, Krishna seems to be, because the word before this, Udbahat, means assuming. He's assuming the role of Pashupa Vansha, someone in the family of cowherds, Shishutva. Shishu means a boy, a little boy. And the twa at the end, this is significant in Sanskrit, twa is the suffix, or that means nest, you can say, N-E-S-S. So shishu twa means childness, like a child. Just like in the Guru Vashtakam prayers, sakshad hari twaina. There it's not twa, but it's the same twaina. It's a different grammatical ending, but it means the same thing. Hari twaina or hari twa means the guru is hari twa, like hari. He's not Hari himself, but he's like Hari. So Shishutva means Krishna is playing here in the category of a child. And then the next word, Natyam. So the whole thing, this word comes up often in describing Krishna. Natyam means like an actor. Now today we know the word Bharatanatyam, which means dance. It's a kind of dance. So this is significant what it makes us think or It implies that in this old culture, the plays were dances, generally. There's dancing and singing. This is the play, not just speaking. Of course, even Bhagavad Gita is sung. So Natyam means both dance and play. We have previously, not too long ago, I don't think it's very popular today, but we used to have in Western culture musicals or operas. So, the singing and dancing, natyam. Of course, this is especially significant for the spiritual world too. Natyam gamanam, there it says. That every gamana means a step, gama. So every step is natya in the spiritual world. Sri Akanta, Kanta, Paramapurusha, Kalpataravo, Drumabu, Mishchintamani, Ganamayi. The bhumi there, the bhumi of the spiritual world, or the land, the earth, Chintamani Gana Mayi. So Chintamani Gana. Gana means group. So group together, Chintamani. Chintamani gems, spiritual gems. Mayi means made of. So the earth, or the ground of the spiritual world is made of Chintamani stones. That's why it's also called Chintamani Dham. Chintamani Ganami Toyam Amritam. And toyam means the water. Just like we in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam. Offer me water, fruit, flower, and water. So the toyam there is Amritam. It's all nectar. And then the Kata means speech. So all of the speech is ganam. Ganam means a song. So all the speech is singing in Krishna's world, Goloka Vrindavan. And again, all this walking is dancing. Makes me think of just like children, they're happy, they skip. They don't walk, they're excited to go somewhere, so they skip along. So everyone's excited in Goloka Vrindavan to play with Krishna, to be with Krishna. So they're dancing everywhere. The cowherd boys are dancing into the forest every morning. So this is natyam, but it also means a play, an actor, a drama. See, udvahat means that Krishna is assuming the role. So who is this person who's assuming this role? That's described by these other words. Brahma dvayam. He's Brahma. This Brahma is not Lord Brahma, but Brahma, the Parabrahma, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Brahma means the Absolute Truth, the greatest thing. It's related to the Sanskrit word brihat, which means big. So the biggest thing, Brahma, what is one of the characteristics of it? Advayam. This word is very significant in philosophical debates. In discourse, Advaya means no second thing. Really, there's no second thing. There's only Krishna. Ekam Brahma Dutiya Nasti. This is the Vedic phrase. Ekam Brahma. There's one Brahma, spiritual truth. There's one spiritual truth. Spiritual truth is only one thing. This morning we were hearing it in the reading after Mangal Arati, Prabhupada said, was talking about. The Mohammedans and the Christians, Hindus, they're all worshiping the same God because there's only one God. So there's only one absolute truth. Advayam, there's no second. And everything is Him in one sense. We know that our philosophy of Achintya Beta Beta Tattva refines this understanding. But this idea is presented also in the second chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam in one of the most important verses for our philosophy. Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yas jnanam advayam. So what is the tattva? Tattva also means the truth. What is the truth or the supreme truth? Tattva, actually, to go back to this idea of tva, this suffix tva. Tat means that, and tva means ness, N-E-S-S. So the tattva means what a thing is, you can say, the thatness of something, its essential identity. So tattva of the supreme refers to the supreme absolute truth. It's the real thing. It's really the only thing. Tattva is the only thing. It's sattva also, it's truth. Here again we have tva. Sat means eternality. So sattva, eternal. So that supreme absolute truth, Vadanti tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanam advayam. There it said that it is advaya jnana. Here it's called Brahma Advayam, or Advaya, or non-dual spiritual truth. And in that Bhagavatam verse, in the second chapter of the Bhagavatam, it's described as non-dual knowledge. I was thinking of this the last couple of days. Why is the absolute truth called knowledge, jnana? So I just briefly looked at a commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur on this verse, and he relates it to the idea that Krishna is the chit pot, sat chit ananda. We know that Krishna is knowledge, because what is he made of? Sat, chit, and ananda. He's made of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So chit and jnana, you can say, these are the same thing, basically knowledge or consciousness. So Krishna is certainly jnana. He is knowledge itself. He's the knower. He's what is to be known. He's knowledge. He's all of these things. He's chit. He's consciousness. Consciousness is really what's important. That, of course, that's our philosophy. Consciousness is what's important. Consciousness is the soul, or the manifestation of the soul. So Krishna is the supreme consciousness. And he's, of course, his consciousness, as Prabhupada talks here, Advayam. He talks about Agada Bodham and Advayam. His knowledge is unlimited, and he himself is non-dual. So his knowledge, of course, is boundless. It goes everywhere. That's the distinction of Krishna. We also have jnana. We can possess some jnana, but our jnana is limited. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it says, Sarva Kshetreshu Bharata. We are called Kshetreshu. Kshetra, just like Kuru Kshetra. Kshetra means a field. So Kshetra Gya, Gya and Gyan, they're related. Gya means the knower. So we're knowers of one field, this body. But Krishna is Sarva Kshetreshu. He knows all the bodies. He's conscious of all the bodies. We're consciousness, but he's super consciousness. So some of the other characteristics of this person who's appearing like a little boy, this entity who's appearing like a little boy, little cowherd boy, Padam, he's the supreme, Anantam, he's unlimited, and Agada Bodham, his intelligence is boundless. When I first read this verse, I said, that reminds me of something. I think I know this word from somewhere. Then I remember there's a very nice verse in the, it's quoted by the Acharyas, show the position of the gopis. When the gopis met Krishna at Kurukshetra, this is what, there's one verse, well, they spoke different things to him, but one nice verse they spoke was, Ahushchate nalina naba padaravindam yogeshwarer rijivichintyam agara bodhai. Sangsara kupa patitottara navalambham geham jusham apimanasyuriyat sadana. So the gopis prayed to Krishna that your lotus feet are meditated upon by great mystic yogis and philosophers. So the word used for philosophers there is agada bodhai, just like this, agada bodham. So they say your lotus feet are meditated upon by these persons, these very intelligent persons. And by meditating on those lotus feet, they become delivered from samsara kupa, the well of samsara, material existence. And then they say, may those lotus feet also be awakened within our hearts, although we're just ordinary persons attached to household affairs. We're just ordinary grihamedis. So we can't expect to get the same results as these agada bodhai, these very intelligent persons. But we pray that you allow this. May your lotus feet awaken within our hearts. So what I thought was significant here is that the gopis, they're humbled, you can say, in the presence or thinking about great learned philosophers. But we know that the gopis are more intelligent than anyone because they know Krishna, they know everything. And they've come to the supreme conclusion. We know that there are different kinds of intelligence. We can see it ourselves, of course, and like Prabhupada at the end of this purport, he's talking about the scientists. He's blasting the scientists for really not knowing anything. He said, they think they know everything, they don't know anything. So who becomes the scientist? You may have had experience in when you went to school. You know, who became the scientist, the brainiacs in your class, who always got straight A's and so on. They became scientists. When I was in college, the real smart guys, they took aero. We call them aero, the aero majors. Aero meaning aeronautical engineering. So these were the real smart guys. I heard an interview one time with a rocket scientist. Sometimes we say, you know, who do we think are the smartest people? We say rocket scientists or brain surgeons, right? We say it doesn't take a rocket scientist or it doesn't take a brain surgeon. So they asked the rocket scientist, what do you say? So he said, actually, I think the people who have the biggest intellectual challenge are those who are trying to solve the social problems. It's one thing to solve an engineering problem, which is just mathematics. A computer can do it in some ways. Because there are different kinds of intelligence. Even chess, you know, they can program a computer to beat the greatest chess champion, because ultimately chess is all about numbers and probability and so on. So there's different kinds of intelligence. So philosophers may have one kind of intelligence. The Mahabharata says, by that kind of intelligence, you don't come to any conclusion. You just end up arguing all the time. Real intelligence is to take shelter of those who actually know the truth, those who have seen the truth. Then you can learn from them. So the gopis, they have real intelligence. They've heard about Krishna. Of course, they have direct experience of Krishna. They have fully realized intelligence. So this is really agatha bodhi. This is really intelligence. So that's the... Lord Brahma is seeing this here. He's seeing that the absolute truth is appearing like a little boy. And the scene here is so beautiful. Brahma comes back and what does he see? Krishna's all by himself. He's like this bewildered little kid and he's walking around and he's looking. We'll hear more about this. But he's looking for, where did the boy, because he went away to look, if you remember, at the beginning of this pastime, the cows and the calves, maybe it was the calves, had wandered away somewhere. So Krishna says, you just stay here and eat and I'll go look for the calves. So when he left, then Brahma stole all the boys. So now he's coming back and it's as if he's still looking. He's still looking around, looking for his calves still. But he's standing there, and then what is he, like this little boy, he's still holding in his hand this kubala, the rice and yogurt mixture. Brahma will describe this in the first verse of the 14th chapter we'll be coming up upon. Naomi jete bravapushe tadidam baraya. Very beautiful verse describing Krishna's form. So one of the things in that description is that he's still holding in his hand the same. He left with it. And when the cowherd boys, when Krishna comes back, now a whole year has passed, and the cowherd boys say, Krishna, you were just gone for a second. You came back so fast. We haven't even started eating yet. Come down, sit down and eat with us. So this is all part of the mystery, the mysticism of Krishna, which Brahma, of course, foreheads are spinning. What happens here? It looks like... this simple little boy. But who is he? Brahma Dvayam Paramanantam Agada Bodham. He's all these characteristics of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now he's realizing he's just not some little cowherd boy in this village of Vrindavan playing with his friends, but he's the unlimited Supreme Absolute Truth. He's the source of everything. His intelligence is everywhere, agatha bodham, unlimited. How can I compete with him? I can't come up against him, challenge him in any way. So he becomes humbled, and he recites so many beautiful prayers. In this next chapter, we'll read so many wonderful prayers. 14th chapter has many verses that Prabhupada would quote often, many important verses that they often quoted by the Vaishnava Acharyas. So we'll be hearing those coming up in the next few weeks. So today's verse translation. Then Lord Brahma saw the absolute truth, who is one without a second, who possesses full knowledge, and who is unlimited. Assuming the role of a child in a family of cowherd men, and standing all alone, just as before, with a morsel of food in his hand, searching everywhere for the calves and his cowherd friends. Phil, any questions or comments? Madame Mohan Prabhu?
I waited to see if anybody else was going to raise me. You mentioned that Krishna, he's consciousness, and his consciousness is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So within, because a lot of times it mentions that Krishna, his consciousness is within the atom, he's there, he's not alone. So is that accessible? That Krishna, he's fully conscious there. He's there, but then he's in his Vrindavan Leela. So how does that work exactly? Do we have access to Krishna like that?
Well, there are different ways to answer that. One thing is, of course, we can be conscious of whatever Krishna wants. We hear in the Bhagavatam, where is it? It's in the first canto. I'm forgetting who says it. Is it the Vyas say it to Narada? You're as good as the all-pervading super soul? Something like that. And that's what he says. I think it's that Vyas says it to Narada. So when you're in touch with Krishna, then you can know anything that Krishna knows. Because you can, when you're in touch with Krishna, you're with Krishna. But generally speaking, because we're jivas, we don't display that potency. But it can be available to us. In one way or another. Another way to look at it is, it's when in that verse where it says that Krishna is present within the atom, it says there, or in the translation to that verse, it says Krishna is present in his fullness within the atom. So Prabhupada also says, in commenting on this and similar ideas, that Krishna is never alone. He would make that point. Krishna is never alone. So he's never alone means he's there with his entourage, with all his servants. So if Krishna was in the atom, then we can be in the atom with Krishna, experiencing what he's experiencing because of our association with Krishna. So everything is possible, you can say. By Krishna's potency, everything becomes possible. When you're with Krishna, then nothing is denied. Just like when you're the king, we're the servant of the king, you go everywhere the king goes. So when you're the servant of Krishna, you can go anywhere Krishna goes. You can know anything Krishna knows that is available to you. But we know that generally speaking, that's not the condition of the living entity. Although certainly consciousness becomes expanded. Mahatma. The Mahatma has an expanded consciousness. But never fully conscious of everything. Because then, of course, that's the distinction. That's what the impersonalists say, the Mayavadis say. When you become self-realized, then you become super conscious, supremely conscious, knower of everything, all universal or complete, unlimited knowledge. That's not there, but we can know another way to look at it is we can know any aspect of the creation according to Krishna's desire because of our association with Krishna, because of he can invest us with that potency. And there are many, you can say, confounding things, just like we know that even the ordinary living entities can be in more than one place at the same time by Krishna's potency, or at least Krishna's internal potency. Those who are closer to him, you can say, ontologically, they can be in Krishna's leela in different places at the same time, and they can do different things at the same time. So these things, of course, are inconceivable to us. But we're never the supreme consciousness. Yes, Madam Mohan?
I was also thinking, it seems like we do have some understanding because when we offer prayers, we understand Krishna hears them, even if we're just thinking them. When we're thinking of a prayer, we're offering this prayer to Krishna, we think that Krishna's hearing this prayer. Yeah. And how is it that, you know, like just in your mind, we know that he's there listening to your prayer. So it seems like some parts we accept. It's just like built in. Everybody offers, or even when you offer obeisances and you say it, you're not really saying it to the floor. You know, you're figuring that Krishna is hearing.
Yeah, we have the conception, some sense that yeah, Krishna is everywhere. Of course, we also know Krishna is within the heart. So, related to this, I don't know what the answer to this. I wonder, how does this apply to the demigods? If I'm a worshiper of Indra, does Indra know my thoughts? Does he know when somebody's thinking about him? That would mean he knows the thoughts of everybody? I don't know how that works. If anybody has an answer to that, they can explain it to me. I don't know how it works for the demigods. But Krishna, we know, because Krishna is within everyone's heart. So he can know everything. And yes, you're right, we have some sense of that. We have some kind of perception of that. Yes.
Just one other comment. Someone was asked Prabhupada about being omniscient, since he was a pure devotee. He knows everything. And Prabhupada said he knows what Krishna allows him to know.
Yeah.
So that there's that connection that's always there. I always relate that to, as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. So Krishna, he's always adjusting everything, even whatever we know, that's what Krishna is allowing us to know.
Mm-hmm.
Even the intrigue of love, I call it. But.
Mother Lakshmi Moni?
Actually, when that question came up to Prabhupada, but Prabhupada, I thought you knew everything. And he said, no, you have misunderstood.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, I know what Krishna wants me to know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that if he needed to fix his car, he could take the engine apart and put it back together again, you know, that was a misunderstanding in the sense of knowing everything.
And because we know Krishna, that's another way to say it. If you know Krishna, you know everything. There's a Vedic verse that says that. Yasmin vigyati sarvam evam vigyatam bhavati. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.